Blog Talk Radio.
Too much month left over at the end of the money? Bad credit holding you back? Want to become a real estate investor but haven't won the lottery? Learn how to fix your credit, get out of debt, and build true financial independence with real estate in 1 hour a week. Tune in to Unlock Your Wealth Radio with Heather Wagner. She'll show you how without winning the lottery or working 10 jobs. And here's your host, Heather Wagner.
Unlock Your Wealth Radio, Saturday, March 14th. We're broadcasting live from Washington, Phoenix, Arizona. And here's your host, Kevin Wagner.
Good morning, everyone. And thanks so much to my new host, my guest host, my stepson, Connor, who decided to fill in for our live audience today. I only have him around. Everybody else ditched me this week, but that's okay because we've corrected all of our technical issues. Yay! Everybody happy about that? I know that I am. We found out that... There we go. The technical issues had nothing to do with the broadcast professionals that I'm working with. They had everything to do with operator error. So that would be me. So I just wanted to share that with you all, and I'm taking responsibility for the poor quality of the broadcast. This week we have an incredible show. I want to tell you a little bit about what we're going to do today. And like every Saturday, we broadcast the Unlock Your Wealth radio program, and we talk about crisis management and financial wellness designed to help every man, woman, and child alike manage their finances and attitudes for the single purpose of financial independence. And today we're going to focus on the attitude portion with our 11th key in the Keys to Riches, which is forget the perfection principle. We have our trivia question this week, and I wanted to tell you a little bit about how I've changed the trivia question format. The trivia question formats will now feature a question that was information from last week's broadcast. So if you want to have a successful shot at answering a trivia question, you need to listen. Listen last week, and if you weren't able to catch the show live, it's pretty incredible because you are able to download these. So isn't that exciting? Yes, it is. If you just go to blogtalkradio.com/unlockyourwealth, or if you click on the radio players on either unlockyourwealth.com or hqrealestateandinvestment.com, you too can download and listen to archived episodes for free. Isn't that fabulous? Free is so good. At least I think so. So the trivia question for this week is, how many trade lines do you need for conforming conventional mortgages? Now, we talked about underwriting criteria for investor mortgages, for conforming loans when you live in the house itself. So the trivia question is, how many trade lines do you need for conforming conventional mortgages? Now, you can call in later on in the broadcast to try to win, and that number to call in is area code 718-508-9002. 718-508-9002. And this week we have professional coaching for you through the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation. And you will receive 13 weeks of coaching to help coincide with the Baker's Dozen of Keys in the Keys to Riches program. So we will support you the whole way to get through that first path to financial independence and getting yourself organized and on track for financial success through real estate. Now, we've got on Minutes on Your Money, we're going to talk about today tips on selling your home in a flooded market. Our investor's edge is deferred maintenance in today's economic climate. And nuts and bolts is going to be interesting. I'm probably going to get a little hot under the collar, and I'm going to interpret some of the information because I think it's being spun to the public as something that's super fabulous that isn't quite so. and that's going to be Obama's housing plan. How does that affect you, the incentives, the giveaways, the takeaways that nobody's talking about? We're going to talk about that today in Nuts and Bolts. Now, if you are not currently a referral partner of the Unlock Your Wealth radio program, but you would like to advertise on our show, learn about the benefits that our featured advisors receive by being a part of an exclusive program where the listeners are seeking financial independence and are in need of your insurance, finance, and real estate and investment services, you may call toll-free at 866-966-9420. 866-966-9420. As always, we'll have our usual News by the Numbers segment with our fabulous correspondent, Karen Gurm. And then our key, again, our featured key for this week is forget the perfection principle. And this is so important because once we get started and we get a little bit of momentum and something happens, maybe it's us that do it, maybe it's someone else that does it to us, that knocks us off of our plan slightly. We don't want to let that get us down. And we got to remember that it's about the progress on the process, and it's not about perfection. So that's this week's key. So we'll talk about these things in depth on today's show. I'm pretty excited about this broadcast. We're almost through the first set of keys, and we're talking about expanding the broadcast to 2 hours in April. If you have an opinion about that and would like to share it, we would love to hear from you. If you would like to email the broadcast or subscribe to the e-zine, please take a moment to send an email to us. You can send that email to info@keystoriches.com, info@keystoriches.com, and either include in the subject line, subscribe me to the e-zine or I want to vote, and you will receive a survey about the show from our fabulous surveymonkey.com, and we will send you a survey and you can tell us what you like, what you don't like, and what you would like to see more of. And one of which is we are contemplating expanding to 2 hours in April when we restart the keys from the very first one. So that's something that we can look forward to. And all of you should think about what your level of participation in this show can be for the next go-round. For Minutes on Your Money, I want to talk to you about an article from Bankrate.com featured on MSN Money. I love perusing other internet finance sites and money management websites to see what they're saying and identify whether or not my perception is that they're on the right track or if they're totally derailing you advice-wise. And I really liked this article that I found on 7 tips to sell your home in a crowded market. And again, this is from Bankrate.com. Now, when neighbors are selling too, it's understandable to worry. But just because there are several homes for sale on the same block doesn't mean that you can't be successful in selling your home. So here are some suggestions that they give you, 7 pointers to help get your house to be the lucky one on the block that gets sold. 1 is to suggest a joint open house. If the family next door and the people down the street have houses on the market, suggest housing at a combined open house on the same day. What you'd like to do is work in concert with your neighbors because they may have somebody that gets their property shown based on certain criteria that for some reason when the real estate agent does an MLS search that it's not including your home, but your home might be that perfect fit and vice versa. So if the guy down the block is selling his house and the guy across the street and the guy next to you have a block party open house, you can take and stimulate more people because now they're not just shopping for one house in that neighborhood. They'll get to see a flavor of the whole neighborhood, and then they'll get to pick one of the houses that might meet their criteria better. I like this tip because I think that the advantages greatly outweigh any potential competition that you may invite because the MLS is a fickle, interesting animal. And on the MLS, if your agent doesn't put in every single little detail about your property and we'll assume that they're operating to the best of their ability. But sometimes silly things like the little mouse dial checks the wrong box, and maybe the information isn't as complete or accurate as the real estate agent thought they had put in. That particular criteria might be exactly what someone is looking for to buy your home, and for some reason, it's not coming, your property isn't coming up in their searches. So now they're looking at the home down the street, and they're not looking at yours. But with this block party style open house, you get a lot of people that will come to see more than one property with a bunch of agents cooperating in the neighborhood, and people will get to see and feel a difference when they're going to be a part of this celebration, if you will, for real estate home sales. So I really liked that idea of a joint open house. It was something I had never considered, but I focus more on working with investors, and so I liquidate properties when their portfolio permits that. But otherwise, we're just looking to buy and invest, and I'm looking for tenants. So I don't do a lot of open houses, so I thought that was a great idea. And it's also a tool as a real estate professional that I can put in my toolbox. The second tip on this list is to sell your entire neighborhood. These days, it's not just about selling your home. You have to go the extra mile and promote the features and benefits in your own neighborhood. Now, you want to help your buyer get past the fear that something might be wrong with the neighborhood, even though you're saying your community is great. Let them see that. Let them see the amenities that are available. Tell them about the parks and shopping nearby, the great restaurants. Feature that relevant information. Maybe even include a social calendar for your community and talk about some of the great things that your neighbors are doing in this brochure. Another way you can do this is to write a seller's letter to potential buyers that anticipates and answers likely questions. And one of the things that we forget as sellers is that at one time we were a buyer too. So we may want to focus on the things that were important to us when we made our home decision, or what factors about our current property is why we fell in love with it. And unfortunately, we have to move, whether it's a job transfer, you're upsizing, you're downsizing. That's not relevant. What's relevant is why you fell in love with this house to begin with, because that might be exactly what someone else uses to fall in love and make that sale happen for you. One of the third tips is to give easy access to your home. When several of your neighbors are selling, it's best to be prepared to show the home on the fly. So what does that mean? Here I am, I'm going to be that nasty real estate agent that tells you don't live in your own home, in the sense that don't leave dirty socks around, make sure everything is put away. When you cook, clean up, do all the dishes, don't leave laundry piled up, make sure that your waste baskets are emptied every day. These are just simple little tips and tricks that can help be the difference in your home selling. Because let's say, for example, that a particular criteria didn't come up, so your property wasn't found on the multiple listing search, and your real estate, or a, I shouldn't say your, but a real estate agent is in the neighborhood showing property, and they show the one two doors down and it didn't quite make it, but they said, well, hey, can we take a look at that house? I see that house has a for sale sign. So when you leave in the morning for work, put your dogs up, make sure everything in that house is perfect, model home perfect, before you walk out that door. So it's that real estate agent that has that buyer in their hand. When they call your real estate agent and your real estate agent says, yes, it's okay to show, and you know that it's to the best of its ability, you have just doubled your effectiveness for maybe recruiting that new buyer. Number four is stage your home, and home staging means decorating your dwelling in a way that appeals to a potential buyer. And then Julie Dana is quoted here, author of The Complete Idiot's Guide to Staging Your Home to Sell. And she says some top staging techniques are to make sure that the address numbers are clear and easy to read from the curb. Who would have thought? But that makes a whole lot of sense. Can you imagine somebody looking for 4269 Anywhere Street and they're driving up and down and you've got bushes that are growing over the house numbers? And they can't find it, and they've gone up and down the street four or five times and can't figure out your house is where it is. So they just decide, oh, well, you know, we didn't really think we wanted that one anyway, and they bypass your house totally. Another thing is to add some lighting and make the house look great at night. Many times people do an evening drive-by before they decide to ask for a showing. One of the things they're looking for is neighborhood traffic and vibrancy. Are kids out in the yard playing? Is the house well lit? And if your house has dark shadows around the windows, things like that, it might be inviting intruders. And so these are things that you need to consider, lighting the outside of your home. Clean and declutter mail, bathroom toiletries, kids' toys, all of that stuff needs to be out of view. And here's the one that I have always found that was really hard for my sellers, because they still live in this home and so they still think of it as their property, but you need to depersonalize it. A potential buyer cannot picture this home as their own when they walk in and they see your family's reunion photo on the mantle. They can't picture their family sitting on that mantle because now they feel like they're in your home and not in their future home. So put the knickknacks and the things that make your house a home away. It can distract buyers from visualizing the property as their own. So vacation photos, trophies, anything that makes your house you, you got to get rid of it. Genericize your home. And make sure that your home is up to date with some of the designs. Simple things. Like if you've got that 20-year-old sofa, go buy a $50 slipcover and make the house look like it's contemporary. It's part of today's here and now. If people get a vibe, and even though the vibe might just be your ratty old furniture, if they get a vibe in that house that this is old and it needs a whole lot of work updating, again, they're not going to see themselves in it. But if you have little up-to-date things and very inexpensive things like slip covers and cushions and stuff can change the whole aura and energy of your home into something that's vibrant and contemporary, there again, they can see that this might be the home for them. So these are some great tips. Number five is the one that I always seem to struggle with real estate clients, and that's pricing your home right. I'm going to make a statement, and you're probably all going to hate me for it, but I can't tell you this enough. When a real estate client is buying a property, they're lowballing. When a real estate client is selling a property, they're highballing, because in their estimation, this is the most fabulous property, and that's great. I'm glad that you have invested in time, love, and attention decorating and beautifying your home with plants and flowers and paint and added the slickest appliances. But we have to remember that willing buyer, willing seller negotiating freely in an open market does not dictate value. Right now, we're in a buyer's market. You've got home prices. I'm not going to say value, but home prices being pulled down because banks are finally relenting and letting go of some of these overpriced properties. I showed a few properties just last week, and they were in the $300,000 to $400,000 range when they sold at the peak of the market a few years ago. And now they're in the $70,000 to $80,000 range right now, these bank-owned properties. And ideally, because of the style of home it is, because of the size of the lots, they're entry-level neighborhoods. So you're looking at single-family homes that really have a value of about $140 to $160 with or without pool. Okay, so again, it sold for $400. Its real value was never $400. It was right around $150. And now, because a bank is liquidating it and because they couldn't find anybody else to buy in at that high price, now they're selling it for like $70,000. So again, $70,000 isn't the value, but it is willing buyer, willing seller negotiating freely in an open market dictates our price. So we have to be realistic in today's market in certain segments of the marketplace. Now, I live and work in Scottsdale, Arizona, and to give you a flavor for what our Arizona market is like, I live in a high-rise, and it's a luxury condominium community. And given what's going on in today's market. We only had one foreclosure in the building, and that was from a speculator who was trying to ride the market out and just didn't have enough time or money to continue the ride. So that one sold at a pretty inexpensive price in relation to it. But just a few months ago, we had one of our properties close at $900 a square foot. Now, this is a condo. So what do we know about condominium ownership? You only own the airspace between the four walls, floor, and a ceiling. You don't have a tangible piece of property. And then you own a percentage of common interest in all of the common elements that the homeowners or the condo owners association has. So you own 1/100th of the pool, 1/100th of the playground, whatever it might be, whatever your amenities are in your particular condominium neighborhood. Now you go to the next luxury community. You just hop essentially 3 miles away to Paradise Valley, and you have homes now that were, I don't know, built like 40 years ago. So most of them we call scrapers, but these are homes that were built 40 years ago, so they need significant updating, usually wiring, plumbing, et cetera, if you just keep the same structure, if you don't scrape it and start over. And these are homes that are built on quarter, half-acre, two-acre lots, and you can't give these away for $1 million. Cannot give them away. So, and so they're definitely not going for $900 a square foot. So different segments of the market are going in different areas. Our bottom market, or our entry-level housing market, which is our single-family homes, which are, you know, FHA, VA-type loans, in the $120,000 to $180,000 range right now, these ones are going for below market value. But, or I should say, however, if you do not have a trashed-out foreclosure where it's going to need some work before someone goes in, and if you've maintained your property well, you might be able to capture some of that value that you have in there and not succumb to that $80,000, $90,000 price floor. But again, you got to be realistic. So let your real estate agent do their homework. Let them pull their comparable prices. Let them figure out what's going in the market. Take into account what percentage of your neighborhood is actually foreclosing, and then take a look at what number of properties that are not foreclosures that are just regular resales out there and see what those are going for. And be optimistic but realistic, because, yes, you did put a lot of time, money, and effort in your home, but it just might not be where it needs to be price-wise. And but the value and your personal value of it is still there. But we have to be realistic in today's times, depending on what price range that we're selling in, and depending on what's going on in the marketplace. Remember, from a few weeks ago, I brought the housing stats out. Only 3% of our total housing inventory is actually foreclosure. But certain pockets in certain neighborhoods may have higher foreclosure numbers than others based on income and price points in the properties to begin with when the run-up started to happen in the market. So those are things you have to consider. Now, number six, they say, is to use creativity to boost buyer interest. Now, because houses are staying on the market even longer, even when you as the seller do everything perfect, meaning you listen to your agent, you price the property correctly, you hold open houses, you're available at the drop of the hat, to keep your listing from appearing stale, it's important to continually tweak your strategies. Now, I think a lot of real estate agents got comfortable in the run-up because all they had to do back in the day, just a few years ago, was to put a property on a multiple listing service. They never even had to run an ad, and they would have 40 offers with no showings, people wanting to pay cash over what you had it listed for. But those days are gone, so now we have to employ our market strategies again. Now, I like to track the real estate market on a daily basis here in Arizona in the market that I work in, which is the county of Maricopa. And that's the biggest pocket of Arizonans, and where our population center is pretty much in Maricopa County. And I'm taking a look at, and I keep listening to the national news saying about housing stats and things like that. And our market is hopping. So far, we've had over 2,000 closings, and we're only halfway through the month this month. And last month, last year, we had just over like 4,200 closings. So we're on target or on pace with what we were last month. And during the run-up, it wasn't quite 7,000. I went and I looked back the other day, and it wasn't quite 7,000 closings when we had a fraction of the inventory. So I'm going to tell you, in our market in Maricopa, even though we happen to have a bulk of foreclosures compared to other areas of the country just because of our housing mix, we're doing okay. Because if you go back further in 2001, before 9/11, when a smoking deal on a 30-year fixed-rate loan was 9.5%, we were still selling 4,000 homes a month. So our market is okay. I wish newsmakers understood this. I wish they could take a look at this information as we can as industry professionals and be able to say for sure what's going on. We do have a lot of foreclosure activity, but we still have volume, and our listing volume isn't higher than what it was when we were at a good point in our market in 01. So that's just my little tidbit. And number seven, I like this. This is a class act in this article. If your neighbor sells first, celebrate. It might be disappointing to find out that your neighbor's home sold while yours still sits on the market with no offers. But, you know, what you need to remember is that your neighborhood is popular. And if your neighbor can sell and someone is willing to buy in your neighborhood, someone else is willing to buy there too. So if you just focus on your efforts on what you can control, and those are the things that I told you about, depersonalize your home, make it generic, update it, make it visible, make it light, and be available to have it show, and you too can be one of those celebratory homeowners that sold a property in today's housing market. We're going to be right back in just a moment. We're going to take a break, and then we'll be talking about nuts and bolts.
If I were a rich man, diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-dum, all day long I'd busy-busy-dum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard. Diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-dum. If I were a busy-busy-rich, idle-diddle-diddle-diddle-man, I'd build a big tall house with rooms by the thousand, right in the middle of the town. A fine tin roof with real wooden floors below. There could be one long staircase just going up, and one even longer coming down, and one more leading nowhere just for show.
Welcome back. We're listening to Unlock Your Wealth Radio and Center Magazine podcasting. Saturday, March
15th.
It was raining yesterday. But we've got some clouds, but it looks like it's going to be a sunny day after all. And I'm actually going to skip nuts and bolts for now, and I'm going to bring on our fabulous segment host, Karen Gurm, who's going to talk with us about minutes on our money. Karen, are you with the broadcast this morning?
I am. Hello, Heather. How are you?
I'm great, and the sun is up, so I know you are too.
I am.
Well, what have you got for us this week? I know there was a little bit of economic data that came out this week.
Well, Heather, this week we are taking a closer look at personal income figures because we noticed that no one is talking about these and we're not sure why. Our personal income and outlays from the Bureau of Economic Analysis, an agency of the U.S. Department of Commerce for January 2009, February has not yet been published. Personal income increased $44.8 billion, or almost half of 1%, and disposable personal income, or DPI, what you have left after housing and utilities expenses, increased $183 billion, or 1.7% in January, according to the Bureau of Economic Analysis. Personal consumption expenditures, or PCE, increased $56.5 billion, or more than half of 1%. In December, personal income had decreased $24 billion, or almost a quarter of 1%. Disposable personal income decreased $17.8 billion, or almost a quarter of 1%, and PCE decreased a little more than $101 billion, or 1%, based on revised estimates. Real disposable income increased 1.5% in January, compared with an increase of almost a half of 1% in December. Real personal consumption expenditures increased almost a half of 1%, in contrast to a decrease of half of 1%. What we're looking at is almost an inverse relationship between these 2 months historically. To break these numbers down, we would typically see Christmas bonuses and extra spending for the holiday season and a tighter January. These numbers are telling us that we didn't go hog wild for the holidays, and even with the purported bleak economy, we made more and we spent more in January. So why isn't the mainstream media picking this up? Well, public sentiment drives legislation, and elected officials are lawmakers. That is what they do, make laws. If everybody is content and productive, why would we need to make more laws? They would be out of a job in a heartbeat, that's why. The U.S. Census Bureau and the U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis, through the Department of Commerce, announced Friday that total January exports of nearly $125 billion and imports of nearly $161 billion resulted in a goods and service deficit of $36 billion that went down from almost $40 billion in December. January imports were $11.5 billion less than December imports of $172.5 billion. Although we bought less foreign product, we also sold less to foreign interests, too. In January, exports were more than $7.5 billion less than December exports of $132.5 billion. The January figures broken down by country showed surpluses in billions of dollars, with Hong Kong, Singapore, Australia, and Egypt. Deficits were recorded in billions of dollars, with China, Japan, OPEC, the European Union, Mexico, Canada, Korea, Taiwan, and Venezuela. Numbers we are waiting for next week are March 17th new residential construction, which is housing starts, numbers everyone is concerned with these days, March 18th international transactions for the 2008 fourth quarter, and March 25th advance report on durable goods like washing machines, etc. And that is your News by the Numbers. I'm Karen Gurm.
Wow, thanks for that information, and not only the information, but the added commentary. You're so right. What would our politicians do if there wasn't anybody that was wronged? What if things actually worked right? What would they do all day? I couldn't tell you. All I know is that I'm excited to see what the housing starts are going to be, because we've watched a lot of developers fall out and get bought out, and it'll be interesting to see who's building. I still think there's a little bit more inventory in the new homes that needs to be absorbed, but we're not quite there. At least that's my estimation based on what I'm seeing in Maricopa County, again, where I do business in the fabulous state of Arizona. Quickly, let's go to Investor's Edge. And today on the Investor's Edge, I wanted to talk to you about deferred maintenance. If you have residential rental real estate right now, you are positioned very well to take care of some of those maintenance items that you've been putting off. And let me tell you why. With these purported tough economic times, I am receiving so many phone calls from different contractors. Heather, do you have any clients that need X? because they're a client of yours, I'm going to give them 20% off. I'm going to give them 30% off. I had one call me and said, if you give me two clients, this is what I'm going to do for them. Forget about what he's going to do for me. But he offered me an incentive. I am going to give them two-for-one deals, okay? This was a painter, and he does commercial painting on multifamily homes. So that's apartment complexes is what we're talking about. And he's offering to paint one building for free if another building will pay full price, if one owner will pay full price. That is huge, folks. You're not going to see these kind of deals. So if you're looking at, well, you know, I'm just now starting to get my cash flow back. I've been able to refinance my property, and I'm getting cash flow. If you've been properly setting aside your sinking funds, now is the time to cash in and spend that money improving your property. I would put the money in now. On all of my properties, any deferred maintenance that I said, well, I'll wait till it gets warmer, or I'll wait till this or that, or until it becomes an emergent situation, I decided that, you know what, I'm going to pull the trigger and take care of all this stuff right now. And I would suggest that you do that too. So for Investor's Edge today, we're going to prioritize our deferred maintenance. Now, I promised you in nuts and bolts that we would talk about Obama's housing plan. And I got carried away with the minutes on your money because I just really enjoyed that segment today. But I'm going to tell you a little bit about Obama's plan. First, I'm going to give you his quote that precipitated the plan. And Obama says, the plan I'm announcing focuses on rescuing families who played by the rules and acted responsibly. He said this when he announced his Homeowner Affordability and Stability Plan, or HASP, as the acronym goes. He explained that it would be done by, quote, refinancing loans for millions of families in traditional mortgages who are underwater or close to it, by modifying loans for families stuck in subprime mortgages they can't afford. And why was that? As a result, by the way, that was my editorial embellishment, that can't afford as a result of skyrocketing interest rates or personal misfortune. And by taking broader steps to keep mortgage rates low so that families can secure loans with affordable monthly payments. All right, so this is what he intended to do. He estimates that his administration's plan will help 7 to 9 million families avoid hardship or foreclosure. Here's the kicker, though. Many of them won't be eligible to get help because of the limitations or the exceptions in his plan. So let me tell you who is defined as a responsible homeowner. Number one, someone who has not fallen behind on their monthly mortgage payment. And right now, stats are saying that 40% of mortgage payers have missed one payment or been 30 days late in the last year. They owe more than 80% of their home's current appraised value, but they owe no more than 105% of the current appraised value, and that they have mortgages that are owned or guaranteed by Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. Well, guess what? Fannie and Freddie weren't the only mortgage servicers in this entire country. Okay, so anyway, there's two sets of homeowners ideally that this is targeted at. People who got plain conforming conventional loans, or what we in the industry would refer to as a vanilla loan, and they've never fallen seriously behind. And I like that use of seriously. Who defines seriously and how much is it? Is it 30 days? Is it 60, 90, 120? What is seriously behind? Because here in Arizona, we're a deed of trust state. So technically, if your payment is due on the first, by the second, foreclosure proceedings can start in the state of Arizona. A notice of default can be filed if you want to be technical about how deeds of trust work versus mortgages. Mortgage is a loosely used term that encompasses both deeds of trust and mortgages. For your information, and we might make that a trivia question, hint, hint, for an upcoming week. Now, number two, the other people that are supposed to be eligible are people who have subprime mortgages or exotic loans, as these pay option arms, and they might qualify to keep their loan, but just have it modified to a fixed interest rate plan that's more affordable for them. And, you know, I can't mentally get over the fact that when people took some of these types of loans, they knew they were gambling. And when we go to Vegas and we play the roulette wheel and we put our money out and we lose that hand, and however big our bet was, $5, $100, $5,000, do we ask the casino for our money back? Do we ask them to rebate part of it back? Because, well, you know, I was risking my money, but I was only in for the win. Come on. That's all I can think of when I think of this. Subprime loans means you could not get prime financing. So there were a few things that were awry to begin with. One, your income. Two, your credit. Three, your down payment. Remember from the four layers of risk? Character, capacity, capital, and collateral. Well, now, as a result of declining home values, our collateral category in the four layers of risk is what's making people ineligible for these programs. Well, first off, if you don't have a Fannie or Freddie loan, you're not getting at this money anyway. So, sorry, Charlie. So, I have to take on an attorney or a mortgage modification professional to help negotiate on your behalf to create the scenario that you want to try to stay in your home, assuming that your affordability is there. But this is what I need to caution you, and I'm so excited. April 11th, we are having our mortgage modification guest live on the show, and we're going to talk all about mortgage modifications, what they are, what they're not, how they work, how you can potentially benefit, and, you know, what are the potential problems associated with a mortgage modification? Because nobody's focused on that part either. And there are some restrictions that apply when you get a mortgage modification, and we're going to talk about all of this on April 11th. So I'm pretty excited about that broadcast. However, one of the biggest problems is this fourth layer of risk. It is the collateral. With home values declining 20 to 30 to 50% in some neighborhoods or more, like I was sharing with you, these properties I was showing last week for one of my investment clients, you know, $80,000 for this house. It was listed 2,000 square foot, four bedroom, 2.5 bath, two-story, cute little yard, nice neighborhood, pretty clean, homeowners association, so all of the landscaping's nice and taken care of. The home at its peak sold for $380,000. So with those kind of comparables, when you're the guy that bought in this $380,000, $400,000 neighborhood and were servicing the debt because you got a good loan, let's say you got a conforming conventional loan, but it ain't Fannie or Freddie, and you're making your mortgage payments, but now there's no way you can find a comparable sale to get you back your value, and you're upside down by half or more on what you paid. Sorry, Obama's not going to help you. So much for that. Now, if you've got a subprime loan, you people might be able to benefit. If you went stated income or put no money down, things like that, little out-of-the-box type of financing, you potentially may be eligible for a break. They're not going to reduce your mortgage amount if you bought in on 100% financing and now your home is worth 75%. You may not be able to get that 25% erased. But what you could get is a reduction in your interest rate to a fixed rate loan. Now, what happens if you're interest only? You're probably still going to be interest only because you won't be able to afford the principal and interest fully amortized payment. So that's something that we need to consider. Do we modify our loan and stay in our property, or Do we go find another property that's more affordable where we can build some value if we plan on staying in this particular city or neighborhood for very long? So these are questions that you got to ask. But I found it very interesting when I saw this article, and Holden Lewis is a tremendous writer, and he writes for Bankrate.com. And, you know, I love reading, and one of the keys in the Keys to Riches is to become a voracious reader. And I know that even though I've written a pretty successful formula for money management, I'm not the be-all, end-all. So I'm always out there looking for a new tip or trick or tool to add to my toolbox to make what I'm doing for myself and my family the best it can possibly be. So take a look. See if you have a mortgage that's serviced by Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, and consider what your options are and whether or not you might be able to do something about your loan. I know that Obama's saying he's going to save millions of homeowners, but I'm yet to find one that was actually able to do something with his program. So we have our Keys to Riches coming up next, right after this important break.
In life for free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money. That's what I want. Your love gives me such a thrill, but your love won't pay my bills. I want money.
Welcome back to the show. You are listening to Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I'm Heather Wagenhall. And before we get to the Keys to Riches, I would like to start taking callers for our trivia question. So I'm going to go to the phones here. We have a California area code. Okay, go ahead, caller. You are on the air. Do you have an answer for us? Hello? Did I push the... Oh.
Sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, not only did I hang up my caller, but somehow I disconnected myself from the show as well. So, ladies and gentlemen, I do apologize for that. So, I'm just going to go ahead, and hopefully that caller will call back in and receive their 13 weeks of coaching. And the correct answer for the trivia question was, how many trade lines do you need for conforming conventional credit for a mortgage? And that was 4. And the bonus is that you have to have 0 late for 24 months. And that is conforming conventional credit. And that was 4 trade lines that you need for a minimum of 24 months with no late. Gosh, I just need to get better at this soundboard, so I'm so sorry about that. But I'm going to proceed now into our key in the Keys to Riches. And the Keys to Riches is a baker's dozen of financial concepts that not only teach you how to think like the rich and be in control of your own money, but it also gives you specific techniques to create or fix your credit, reduce debt, save and invest, building wealth through real estate, all while transforming your current financial habits into healthy money management skills. The Keys to Riches is part of the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation family of crisis management and financial wellness products designed to help everyone with their manage their money and their attitudes toward building financial independence. So today's key in our Keys to Riches is forget the perfection principle. This is an important key because this is our 11th key. Did I say 9th? I don't know where I got that. This is the 11th key in our Keys to Riches series. So we have two more coming up. And this one is really important because we've created momentum, we've visualized our plan, we've protected ourselves against loss, and now, after we have worked so hard to plan our financial future, maybe we fall off the wagon and something happens. We've aligned our perspectives, we put our emotions in check, and then, whoops, something happens. We make a bad decision, we have a little catastrophic event set us back. What we need to remember is that this isn't about following a process to the T and being perfect about that process. The thing to remember is to keep everything in perspective and focus on the progress of the process, not the process and its perfection itself, and that we follow those keys identically and perfectly. We're all human. Things happen. You never know what's going to happen to you. You never know when you're going to be pinched for cash. Yesterday, I dropped my stepson and his friends off at the mall, and he didn't have any money, and I went to reach in my wallet, and all I had was a $10 bill to give him. So I gave it to him, and then, like every other 12-year-old, he blew the entire 10 bucks and part of his friend's money, too. So as a result, I didn't have any more money for me. And I was starving. I just wanted to run in and grab a burger real quick on my way back to my office. And I wasn't able to do that. But just because that happened to me, that doesn't mean that, oh, all is lost. I fell off the wagon. Now I'm spending money I shouldn't have spent. I gave him money for the mall. Maybe I should have done that because that wasn't in line with my objectives. And, oh, and I just start beating myself up. And then I'm focusing on all that negativity and me screwing up. And not realizing that, well, maybe it isn't so bad. What we need to do is remember that all is not lost. Don't slit your wrists. Don't jump off the next cliff. I mean, things happen. And sometimes things happen that are beyond our control. You know, what if you gave your money to Madoff to invest? I mean, you did your homework. He sent you all kind of brochures and collateral materials saying that he makes people money. Movie stars invested with him, movie moguls, Steven Spielberg, invested with him. Tons of professional athletes, celebrities, rich and famous people invested with Madoff. And what happened? He was a crook. Now, do you beat yourself up for that? No. And you shouldn't second guess yourself. Things happen. But again, we need to remember that we're focusing on our progress. And sometimes we have to take two steps back to take one step forward. So the point of this key is to remember not perfection. We're not even focusing on that. We're focusing on progress. And are we further ahead today than what we were last week, last month, and last year? And if the answer is yes, then you're on the right track. You can't beat yourself up for that. What I want to share with you, because I love neurolinguistic programming, and it is the ultimate success tool. And it's the ultimate tool to guide your pursuit for excellence. And again, I said excellence, not perfection, excellence. And it's about success modeling and adopting the behaviors of people that are successful and that can duplicate those efforts over time and in other people. And that's what the Keys to Riches is. It's a duplicatable process that can take you, just like anybody else, to be financially successful. And we're reminded by neurolinguistic programming that we say this to ourselves: I am doing the best I can with the resources I have available. Another presupposition is I have all of the available resources I need to be successful. And what we've learned in the Keys to Riches is that I just may need to rearrange their order. So we made a mistake, and we've been waiting for that red dress to go on sale, and it didn't, but we had to have it. And so we spent part of our, you know, debt reduction money on it, or we didn't, you know, plan effectively, and, you know, we just went impulsively. It happens. And one of the things that we need to do, and I'm going to talk about this in our key action item, is how to move past this when we happen to have a little event, whether it's of our own doing or someone else's, like Madoff's, whether it's our red dress or whether it's Madoff in his red dress. we got to remember to cut ourselves slack. So this week's key statement is, I will always work to put forth my best effort when managing my money. And in the event that I make a mistake or misjudgment, I know that it is not an indictment of my failures, but an opportunity to recommit my efforts toward financial independence. It's an opportunity to recommit my efforts toward financial independence. One of the things that happens when we focus on negativity or focused on things that we resist, those things that we resist persist. I love that little assonance. Things we resist persist. So if we focus on this and focus on punishing ourselves for what we did wrong, we're not going to be focusing on what we should be doing and what we did right. So we're going to start by changing things first with our key affirmation. Our key affirmation is going to reset our focus back on something positive. I am achieving my financial goals. Run, hurry up, grab a pencil. You probably weren't ready for that. I am achieving my financial goals. See? Pat ourselves on the back. Remember, we use affirmations in the present tense as if we have already accomplished or achieved whatever our goal is. That way, our mental subconscious will put the line items in order that we need to do to be able to create our financial independence. Now, our key action item is what your homework is for this week. And this is what I want you to do. You need to take a moment to be all by yourself, so don't do it when you have family that you must pay attention to, like husbands or children or pets. When you can steal a moment away for yourself, even if it's in the bathroom, sitting on the toilet. What we want to do is close our eyes and refer back when we recently made that mistake with our money. And we need to say to ourselves, what happened? As we evaluate it, we want to look at why it happened. And then we want to say to ourselves, what would I do differently today with what I know now? When we figure out what it is that we know now, what we need to do is forgive that person that made the mistake, our person in the past that we're focusing on this negativity. And then we need to walk up to them and hand them the tools that you have today to make a better decision. And then play that movie in your head with those tools and make that memory successful. Once we take and make that memory successful, that will materially alter the way we deal with this situation the next time it comes up. If we prepare ourselves for that financial opportunity or that potential mistake that we made, will behave differently because we've given ourselves the tools to be successful and we've forgiven ourselves for our action beforehand. This is so important to being successful because sometimes, especially when people are dieting and then they have a cupcake and they think that all is lost and then they go off their diet. And now they're never going to be their ideal weight because they're focusing on the mistake that they made. And so what we need to do is just go back, identify where we went wrong, give ourselves the tools to be successful, and move forward. Thanks so much for joining us. You're listening to Unlock Your Wealth Radio with Heather Wagenhals. We will see you next week.
I've had it up to here. Listening to a small segment of people trying to put down America. America's the greatest land on earth, and we ought to be proud of what we have. I'm proud of America. I'm proud of our people, and I'm going to prove it. We're American and damn proud of it.
Frankly, I'm getting a little ticked off.
Go to hell.